Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, December 4th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. ZANU-PF boycotts a crucial meeting organized by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to discuss the country's political processes with all political parties.
There were more than 20 political parties that attended. The only disappointment was that the ruling party, ZANU-PF, was conspicuous by its absence. I would like to believe that they are hiding something.
Chinese President Xi Jinping announces a $60 billion loan and aid package to spur development in Africa in the latest sign of Beijing's deepening ties to the continent.
There you are. Here is a man. He is doing to us what we expected those who colonized us yesterday to do. If they have ears to hear, let them hear.
And the guessing game on who will be the next president of the Zimbabwe Football Association will soon be over, with elections going ahead as planned in Harare tomorrow. These and much more coming up. Stay tuned. The ruling ZANU-PF party today boycotted a crucial meeting organized by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to discuss the country's electoral processes with political parties. The majority of the country's opposition parties attended the meeting at Mandel Training Center in Harare. ZEC chairperson Rita Makarau referred questions to ZEC chief elections officer Utoile Sligwana when contacted for comment. Sligwana's mobile phone was not reachable. ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo told Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that his office was not aware of the meeting.
Who invited us?
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC.
I never saw that invitation myself. I don't know. Where did they send the invitation to?
They are saying the invitation was sent to all the political parties, and the majority of the opposition parties did attend.
Well, frankly, I've never had sight of such a letter myself. I don't know if there's anybody else who knows about it, but I've never had sight of such an invitation.
But who is responsible for the elections in the party?
Well, they might have written to the Secretary for Administration, I don't know. But they must state where they wrote to, and it'd be clear that they didn't get a response. But we cannot guess whom they wrote to. I have no idea myself. What was the meeting about?
They said strategic planning for the next 5 years.
Strategic planning?
Yes.
Well, we've got Secretary for Legal Affairs, we've got Secretary for Administration. So, I've not heard of anybody being invited. I'm just hearing it from you now.
That was Simon Kayamoyo, the ZANU-PF spokesman. He spoke with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. But MDCT spokesman Obed Gudu tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu his party is not amused by ZANU-PF's antics.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission prepared and organized a strategic plan review workshop, which was actually conducted by a team of experts from Team Consulting, which was basically meant for all political parties in Zimbabwe. And I can also confirm that there were more than 20 political parties that attended this strategic workshop for the period 2016 to 2020. The only disappointment was that the ruling party, ZANU-PF, was conspicuous by its absence. That, for some of us, raised actually more questions than answers, because it appears ZANU-PF are never keen to participate in all these various workshops that are being conducted by ZEC. I would like to believe that they are hiding something.
And are you happy with what ZEC was presenting to you?
I would say yes, in a way, because this was an opportunity for the various political parties. Incidentally, it was the majority of the parties in Zimbabwe, all of them in opposition. This was an opportunity for us to interact and also be in a position to articulate our major concerns. I would like to then disclose to listeners that there were basically six questions that formed the group discussion session. And the first question was, what do you feel ZEC is doing well? Number two, what challenges do you feel ZEC faces? Number three, what are your specific needs and problems with ZEC? Four, how should ZEC undertake a voter registration process that is credible, transparent, and inclusive? Five, how should ZEC make voter education more effective to address issues of voter apathy and ensuring inclusiveness in voter registration and election processes? And the last one was number six, what do you feel are the key areas of focus for ZEC in the next five-year period if it is to fully fulfill its mandate?
That was spokesman Obed Gutu for the Tsvangirai MDC speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. The two-day Forum for China-Africa Cooperation Summit kicked off in Johannesburg today with Chinese President Xi Jinping announcing $60 billion development aid to Africa. This received a round of applause from African heads of state, with President Robert Mugabe describing Jinping as a God-given friend of Africa. Benedictine Lapo reports from Johannesburg.
Over 30 African heads of state attended the official opening of the FOCAC summit in Johannesburg. Many of them were eager to hear what China will put on the table to help their ailing economies. And Chinese President Xi Jinping did not disappoint, outlining a 10-point cooperation accompanied by a huge financial injection.
To ensure the successful implementation of these 10 cooperation plans, China decides to provide a total of $60 billion of funding support.
The money will be used for Africa's industrialization, agricultural programs, development of small and medium enterprises, poverty alleviation programs, education and health, amongst others. President Jinping also insisted that China was treating Africa as an equal partner. He also emphasized that Africa should not be deducted to, but assisted to solve African problems in an African way. This impressed and upbeat President Robert Mugabe, calling Jinping a God-sent person.
There you are. Here is a man. He is doing to us what we expected those who colonized us yesterday to do. If they have ears to hear, let them hear.
In his speech to the summit, President Mugabe went on to praise China, saying relations between China and the continent have stood the test of time. Mr. Mugabe took a swipe at critics of China-Africa relationship.
Once again, our detractors have sought to portray and reduce our relations to purely commercial ties. On the contrary, reality, fortunately, does not conform to such distorted, imaginative creations.
Today, the summit exhibited photos showing FOCAC achievements and also held a China-Africa manufacturing exhibition. There was also a high-level business engagement with heads of state and government. Tomorrow, the Organization of African First Ladies Against HIV and AIDS will hold its session, followed by the closing ceremony of the summit. South African President Zuma and his Chinese counterpart are co-chairing the summit. Reporting for Studio 7 in Johannesburg, this is Benedictine Hlapo.
For more on the China-Africa Summit, Studio 7's Blessing Zulu reached a Chinese expert, Yun San, a non-resident fellow in the Africa Growth Initiative focusing on China's relations with Africa and U.S. China cooperation on the continent at the Brookings Institute in Washington, D.C. She thinks the relationship between Africa and China is no longer just being dictated by Beijing.
Compared to the previous summit, Africa is having a bigger voice in terms of determining the agenda of the summit and also telling China what Africa wants from China, other than only China determining the course of the summit and the substance of the agreement. So we know that African countries have made the request to China that in terms of the economic cooperation, they do not only want the Chinese investment in the natural resources or infrastructure projects, they also want to see China to contribute more in the field such as employment and job creation.
Is it not a cause for concern, like what some critics are saying, that China does not seem to be interested in discussing issues of human rights with African leaders? It's all about business.
From the Chinese perspective, yes, I guess the description is largely true, because what China wants to talk to Africa is economic development. And that's where China sees itself playing the largest role and with the biggest potential to contribute to what Africa needs. In terms of the political process, China will say that we are contributing to the peace and the conflict resolution in African countries. But in terms of the political system of particular African countries, China will regard those issues as internal affairs of these countries. And China would like to largely stay out of that, because China has its own reasons to stay out of other countries' internal affairs. And we know for a fact that China itself is not a democratic country. So on human rights violations, China will largely stay out.
And that was Chinese expert Yun Sun of the Brookings Institute speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu right here in Washington, D.C. More than 50 armed police officers today raided the Chinyamukwakwa village in Chipinge District, Manicaland Province, in search of alleged stolen goods from the controversial green fuel company, including a GPS system. Villagers told Studio 7 they were not impressed by the 3 a.m. military-style raid, which did not yield any results. Platform for Youth Development, which is active in the area, also weighed in, releasing a statement condemning the police raid. Sally Nobuhle Mlambo of the Platform for Youth Development says the raids left the community devastated. Two villagers, Muchatiroto Mashava and his son Gondai, were allegedly handcuffed briefly while the police searched their properties. Studio 7 failed to reach both the Chusumbanje police and the Green Fuel Company for comment. But Mlambo tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri relations between the villagers and the fuel company have now reached an all-time low.
They're allegedly saying that it was stolen by one of the villagers from Chinyamkwakwa, from the company. And they were also claiming that there's missing machinery from Green Fuel that they were also searching for from various homes in Chinyamkwakwa. Three trucks, including two D4D trucks from Green Fuel, arrived at different homes in Chinyamkwakwa with all those police details who were alleging that they are searching for the missing GPS.
So did the police find anything of interest in their search?
The police found nothing, actually. They raided various homes, one of them being Mr. Mashara's home, Mr. Bibi's home, and other villagers. But what they were looking for, they didn't find it. They were threatening the villagers, you know. They were pointing guns and so forth, baton sticks, to the community members, saying that they should reveal where they have hidden all the GPS system of it. However, nothing was found. They had egg on their face because nothing was found.
Where does this leave the relationship between the community, Green Fuel Company, and the police?
You've noticed that already there's tension between the villagers, the police, and the Green Fuel Company. So what has happened now is that those cracks have been steadily widened, because now the villagers, they're not happy with the process that was done by the police of just coming into their homes at 3 a.m.
That was Sally Nobuhle Mlambo of the Platform for Youth Development on the line from Checheche in Chipinge with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri. Now we take a look at regional and international news. Egyptian officials say at least 16 people were killed early today in a Molotov cocktail attack on a nightclub in Cairo. OPEC ministers are meeting today in Vienna, where they will decide whether to slash production to help raise oil prices that have fallen to extreme lows. And Western powers are urging the UN Security Council to hold a fresh meeting on human rights abuses in North Korea, which is accused of carrying out some of the world's worst atrocities.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The recent terrorist attacks across the globe are a reminder that the threat of terrorism has not receded. It has reconstituted and remains grave. The U.S. is committed to using force to protect its citizens and allies and is intensifying the campaign to degrade and ultimately defeat ISIL with new strikes against their leaders, oil fields, and territory. At the same time, said Undersecretary for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights Sarah Sewell, we must remember that no number of airstrikes, soldiers, or spies can eliminate the complex motives and hateful ideologies that feed terrorism. That is why the U.S. is embracing a broader and more holistic approach to this threat called Countering Violent Extremism, or CVE. CVE calls for addressing the underlying factors that make communities vulnerable to the siren call of violent extremism. It also calls for pushing back against the ideology and propaganda violent extremists wield to lure people to their cause. These factors are complex, contextual, and often only apparent at the community level. As such, they are often beyond the means of national governments alone to address. CVE therefore calls for a much broader set of actors to address these factors through whole-of-society approaches that include local officials, businesses, religious leaders, researchers, women, youth, and even former members of extremist groups. Through this more preventative and holistic approach, CVE seeks to tighten the flow of recruits to the current generation of violent extremist groups while better preventing the next generation of threat. Countering violent extremism is therefore an essential complement to military efforts to defeat the Islamic State. This is not a question of either or, said Undersecretary of State Sewell. This complex and generational threat requires both.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And in sports news tonight, as we speak right now, there's a big event going on in Harare where there's a crowning of the Soccer Star of the Year. And to help us go through the event, we have Michael Kariati on the line.
It has been 3 months of campaigning for the four candidates: Leslie Gwindi, Trevor Kiausiju, James Takavada, and Philip Chiangwa. And tomorrow, one of them will take over as the most powerful man in Zimbabwean football. All the candidates have made a lot of promises, but it is up to the 58 members IFA Council to decide as to which one of the four has shown them better ideas. The public have always had their own choices, but whoever it is does not matter, as they do not have voting rights in this institution. As the clock ticks towards election time, Gwindi says he is the right man for the job, claiming his record speaks for himself.
If the media says, who is Gwindi? You talk about Dynamos, you talk about PSL, you talk about PSL again, you will talk about Harare City, you will talk about the Board of Governorship, and the same question must obtain by the candidates. Who are you?
Not to be outdone is Trevor Kiausiju. A former player and Zifa president himself, Kiausiju says his dream is to bring back the good old days when stadiums were full to the brim and people were united.
When I played football and coached football, the stadium was full. People loved to be there. I want that love back again. We can achieve it together. Dream team to reality.
Joe, an international businessman with interests in South Africa, Nigeria, and the United Kingdom, loved off suggestions that he's not resident in Zimbabwe.
I'm here, aren't I?
On the other hand, flashy Harare businessman Philip Chiangwa, who has been flying around the country to meet the electorate, claims Zimbabwean football needs him more than anybody else.
I'm a success story in my own right as an entrepreneur. What FIFA requires at the moment is somebody with where we shall to be able to ensure that the contracts signed by footballers are honored, that they are paid on time, that the coaches are paid on time, that the entire FIFA staff is paid on time, that the debt FIFA owes, which is $6 million, are settled.
Takawada has been the most quiet of the contestants. The 1984 Castle Soccer Star of the Year believes his experience as a player, coach and administrator is what Zimbabwean football needs to reclaim old glory. Apart from the Zifa presidential poll, there will also be elections for the Zifa vice presidency, for whom Omega Spanda and Lincoln Tasa are the contestants. 10 other candidates are vying for the 4 positions on the Zifa board, including renowned former referee Wilfred Mkuna and Warriors midfielder Edzai Kasinawuyo. The new Zifa president will only be in office for the next 2 years, as he is continuing the mandate of Kagbe Dube, who was sacked by the Zifa Council on September 5. By lunchtime tomorrow, Zimbabweans will know who the new Zifa president will be. That aside, action continues on the field of play with the staging of the 2-day Easy Call Cup semi-final extravaganza at Baba Field Stadium. First on the field of play will be the match between Zimbabwe champions Chicken Inn and Capes United tomorrow, which will be followed by the clash between Dynamos and Highlanders the next day. Although this game was hanging by a thread after Dimbare threatened to pull out, PSL chairman Twine Piri said the matter has since been resolved, adding that Dynamos will play. The winners of the 2 matches will clash in the final set for the National Sports Stadium next Saturday. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Thanks a lot, Michael. I'd like to apologize there for introducing that tape as Michael coming on live. But he was talking about the next president of the Zimbabwe Football Association elections. Right now, like I said earlier on, I still have Michael on the line. Michael, I understand there's a big event happening in Harare right now. Can you tell us some more?
As I speak right now, the Zimbabwean football family is gathered at the Fifth Lodge, where they are honoring the 11 outstanding footballers of the season, as well as crowning the most outstanding footballer of the season. Who is who in Zimbabwean football is here. Unfortunately, the proceedings have been delayed. They were supposed to start at 6 p.m. Zimbabwean time, but unfortunately, they have been delayed due to the late arrival of the minister.
Now, apart from the minister, everything is going on as scheduled.
Yeah, as we speak right now, they are about to start the proceedings. And from the look of things, the soccer star of the year will be announced very, very later, deep in the evening. But my understanding and from my own knowledge of the game, I think Danny Piri of Chicken Inn has played an outstanding role this season, and I strongly believe he is going to be rewarded for his outstanding play. I also believe that the Chicken Inn coach, Joey Antipas, is also going to be honored as the coach of the year. But I should also like to mention that two of the finalists are not here right now. Nox Mtizwa is in South Africa on trials, while Clement Matau, I'm told, is not feeling well. But everything else is going well.
And on the goalkeepers, who are your favorites? Who do you think did a good job this year?
This is a very, very difficult question, considering that the two goalkeepers were very, very outstanding. And Nkuruva. But from the local things, I should think maybe, and then Kuruva will take it, not only on the basis that he plays for Dynamo, but on the strength that at his age, he's just coming from school, and what he has done so far is outstanding.
Okay, thanks a lot, Michael. I hope you'll keep an eye for us and our listeners who would like to get a gist of what's going on. And as soon as the results are up, our listeners can go to www.voazimbabwe.com, and that's where they can get more information for tomorrow's election as well of the Zifa presidency. And still on soccer. Thanks a lot, Michael. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Still on soccer, Maswingo United Football Club fans are on the brink of celebrating and are optimistic that their team will return to the Zimbabwe Premier Soccer League next year, as they are currently on top of the Eastern Region Division 1 league table. Gandri Mudzingwa has more details.
The team settled on the apex of the league table last weekend with only one game to go, raising hope that they will soon grace the country's Premier Soccer League to face popular clubs like Dynamos, Highlanders, FC Platinum, ZPC Kariba, Capes United, Chicken Inn, and several others. With only one game to go, Yuna Yuna, as they are affectionately known, are facing Mutoko Traders FC. Maswingo United used to play in the top flight football in Zimbabwe, but were for the third time relegated to Division 1 at the end of the 2011 season. The club used to be bankrolled by Mr. Tanda Tavarua and Sons, who used to own one of the largest fleet of buses in Zimbabwe. The club was established in the year 1997. Yuna Yuna needs to bag 3 points to gain premiership promotion without hassles or a draw if the other two teams contesting for the same spot, Mutare City and Hartley Academy, which are on second and third place respectively, are to lose or draw in their last assignments. Hartley and Mutare City still have chances to gain promotion if Maswingo United loses and they win their last matches. But Maswingo United fans are already in celebratory mood, expressing confidence that their team will win on Sunday to return to Premier League soccer. Emilia Gonisa says she is convinced that Yuna Yuna boys will make it come Sunday.
My desire to Maswingo United is that the boys will succeed in Mutoko and will get back to the Premier League.
Other supporters said they can't wait to get back into their traditional hunting ground, Mucheke Stadium, come next season for Premier League matches. Such is the confidence that parties are already planned everywhere around Maswingo Town to celebrate the promotion. Peter Guyo of Rujewo is expecting nothing less but a return to top flight soccer by Yuna Yuna. Cosmas Naru, another fan, concurs with Guyo, adding that he doesn't expect the team to disappoint in the last minute, allowing them also to join and enjoy the big teams like Dynamos, Capes United and Highlanders coming to play their team at Mucheke.
We are very optimistic that Maswingo United is going to come back in the Football Soccer League in Zimbabwe. As supporters, we are so happy.
But Maswingo United team manager Philip Shumba, although expressing confidence that his boys will triumph over Mutoko, is urging supporters to remain calm until the game is over on Sunday.
We can only celebrate after the game against Mutoko Traders. We don't want to put unnecessary pressure on our players by celebrating prematurely.
The supporters, however, cannot wait for the final whistle on Sunday. This place will explode if Yuna Yuna gains automatic promotion. Everyone is waiting expectantly. Reporting for Studio 7 in Maswingo, I'm Gandri Maramba.
Thanks, Gandri. And now we have a very special programming announcement to make regarding Live Talk. We will not be streaming Live Talk on the internet between 8:30 and 9:30 p.m. as usual due to a special programming change request. We will, however, post the show on our website later in the day. Listeners, however, will still be able to hear Live Talk on the radio from 8:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. We apologize for any inconvenience. We will stream regular show on Monday. And right now, to recap today's top stories. ZANU-PF boycotts a crucial meeting organized by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to discuss the country's political processes with all other political parties. Chinese President Xi Jinping announces a $60 billion loan and aid package to spur development in Africa in the latest sign of Beijing's deepening ties to the continent. That's all we had for you tonight. My name is Chris Gande, and I'm leaving you in the capable hands of Ntungameli Nkomo on the Ndebele News Desk. Good night, Zimbabwe.